Thanks for downloading this show from PC One. Before we get rolling, here's a word from one of the folks who helped bring you this podcast. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Everybody's doing well. Thank you for listening, downloading, streaming, liking, whatever you do with this podcast, however you do it, wherever you're doing it, thank you for doing it. Good to have everybody listening and on board around the world. Greatly appreciated. Podcast is free. You know that by now, and that is thanks to Podcast One and all the great sponsors that we have. Because of them, the Eddie Trunk Podcast is free and with limited ads at no cost to you. If you heard a sponsor that you want to try out, don't forget to check that sponsor out. Check out the list, killer deals button at podcastone.com. Find the Eddie Trunk podcast page. Just search my name. And you get limited commercials here because we only approve the sponsors that make sense for my audience. You know, when we ask you to fill out those polls, that helps us to target the advertising that we do have more specifically to what you guys would be interested in. So check out the banners that are there, the promotional deals listed by the brands, everything you need easily accessible in one place. That's the Eddie Trunk podcast page at podcastone.com. Also, don't forget, we also participate in the Amazon Associates program. That's an affiliate advertising program designed to provide you with the means for me to earn extra fees by linking to Amazon.com and affiliated sites. You can link to Amazon, and we appreciate you doing so through my page at podcastone.com. All right, due to popular demand, I am rushing this to the front of the line. My recent interview from about a week and a half ago with Van Halen's original bassist, Michael Anthony. This interview took place when I was in Los Angeles for my volume show, which was last week, actually. I was there for an entire week. I did an entire week of shows live from LA on volume. Had some tremendous guests, Corey Taylor, Dave Navarro, Kevin Cronin, and Michael Anthony, and Lars Ulrich. So it was an amazing run of guests, as I usually have when I'm out there in LA. And much of my audience, as you would imagine, when they heard of this interview, if they may have missed it, they all said the same thing. You got to get the Michael Anthony show on the podcast. And by now, you know that the interviews here on this podcast, most of them originate from my show on Volume, which you can hear live Monday to Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, replay every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM channel 106. And you can also get them on their app, the entire shows, each and every day. I'm on Monday to Friday, so please check that out for what you spend at Starbucks each day, less than what you spend at Starbucks each day. You can be getting my show live or on the app or on the replays every single day, six shows a week live on Sirius XM. Appreciate you joining me. I can only bring you a very small portion of the interviews that I do there here on this podcast because, of course, this is a one-time-a-week deal, so be sure to check out the radio show. And this week, like I said, by popular demand, Michael Anthony. Before we get to the Michael Anthony interview, I need to say a huge thank you to the members of Metallica, specifically Lars Ulrich, Kirk Hammett, Robert Trujillo, and also Frank Munoz, who works for Metallica. I took my 9-year-old son to his first metal show this past Sunday, which was Metallica with Avenged Sevenfold and Volbeat in New Jersey at MetLife Stadium. And I didn't know what I was going to be in store for. And obviously, I know the Metallica guys, and we have a lot of history, and they're great, great old friends, as well as, of course, in an iconic band. And I, you know, was talking to Lars about coming out to the show, and I told him I was bringing my 9-year-old son, and he said, "Man, that's so cool, because when I was 9, my dad took me to my first show, which was Deep Purple in Copenhagen." So he really related to the fact that my son was seeing his first show at 9 years old, and it was a Metallica show, right? So we went out there, my wife and my son, and I didn't know how my son was going to handle it. It's such a huge show in a stadium. It's overwhelming. The production is unbelievable. Well, we walked in through the backstage. Lars came out, met my son, took a picture with him, posted it on his Twitter. Lars is now on Twitter, at Lars Ulrich. And he took the photo, wrote something really nice, and posted a photo of me and my son on his Twitter feed. Still there. Check it out. And it was just so over the top nice. And then Kirk came over. We hung out with Kirk for a little bit, had a drink, talked. And then the band played, I got to be honest, a couple songs in, my son was a little shaky. He had never seen anything quite at that level, thought he was going to want to bail, but after he got used to it, he wouldn't leave. We stayed for the entire show right to the very end and had a blast. They put us in the snake pit right in front of the band, right down front on the floor. And this show is unbelievable, you guys. And I'm not just saying that because I know these guys and they were nice to me. Trust me, it was amazing. It's hard to believe this, but after 34 years, Metallica may still very well or may be at the top of their game right now. It's incredible. It's incredible. 2.5 hours they played, new stuff, old stuff, middle era stuff. Just monstrous. I saw some of Avenged. I didn't see Volbeat, got there too late. Talked to Rob Caggiano, their guitar player, who's a friend, and it was good to see him. And I watched about 3 Avenged songs, but my son was a little bit still kind of trying to take it in, so we had to go backstage and take cover for a little bit so he could get reacclimated to what was going on. And Avenged sounded great. They went over really well. They had their fans there, and that was very cool for them. And then I saw Shadows the next day, actually came and did my radio show. But it was amazing. And then, you know, there's fireworks at the end, and it's a Sunday night, and my son wants to hang out. I mean, he's got school the next day. So we go backstage again, get a text from Lars's assistant, "Are you still here?" I said, "Yeah." We went backstage. Lars came out again, asked my son what he thought, and my son said, he really liked it, and that Metallica is now his second favorite band. To which Lars said, "Well, who's number one?" And my son said, "Queen." And Lars, of course, as you could imagine, said he could live with that. So it was a really special night. And then Lars proceeds to give my son his drumsticks that he had just ended the show with playing Enter Sandman and some guitar picks. And then we saw Rob Trujillo at the end and spoke to him for a little bit. I mean, just really, really, really incredibly gracious, and I thank those guys, and what an amazing show. If you're a metal fan, you have to see it. It's going to be out there for a while, and really, really, really great night. So I want to thank the Metallica camp for their incredible generosity and hospitality to me and my family, and you know, finally now at 9 years old, my son, who really hasn't shown no interest in metal, may be starting to nudge that way a little bit. So he may have helped the future a little bit as well. I met John McEnroe at the Metallica show when Lars walked into the room. McEnroe was with him, said hi. It's amazing to me how many of these people I meet, even a guy like McEnroe. "Hey, man, I watched you on TV. I knew that metal show." It's so, so cool. It's still amazing how many people talk about that metal show and how many people it still connects with. And again, how many people still ask me about it, which I greatly appreciate it. But I just unfortunately have zero news for you guys. I just don't. We cannot at this time find a home, a network, a believer that will put a rock talk show on. Should that change, you will know immediately. Should anybody hearing the sound of my voice know somebody at a network level that could green light a show and want to do it and gets what we do and appreciates it and sees the value in it, please email me, eddie@eddietrunk.com, and we will be all ears, and I'll put them in touch with the proper people. And also still looking for a home for my pilot, my interview show pilot, and I have a little traction on that lately, so fingers crossed maybe there will be a way for you guys to see that. If you remember a little while ago, I shot a pilot for a one-on-one interview show in New York with a live audience. Ace Frehley was my guest, and I may have some traction on that, fingers crossed. So we'll see what happens. In the meantime, though, 8 broadcasts a week, 6 live on Sirius XM. You got the syndicated show on FM radio, and you have, of course, this podcast every week. So plenty of content to listen to for sure. And I appreciate you guys checking out all the platforms. At Eddie Trunk on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And eddietrunk.com is the website. Apologize for the phone ringing in the background. I apologize for the cat that is meowing in the background doing this podcast from my home studio, and I didn't close the door, and that is, of course, what happens. As my cat is now walking across my computer keyboard. Oh, man. Couldn't make it up. All right, so anyway, let's get to this week's guest. It is one of the all-time greats, one of my favorite people in the world to talk to. It is Michael Anthony of Van Halen. Michael was nice enough to drop by the studio. Michael recently had a tragedy in his family when his two-week-old grandson passed away due to a heart ailment. And in June, Michael is going to be doing a walk to help raise funds for the Children's Hospital in LA that took care of him. A great cause. Go to Matt Anthony's Cafe on Facebook, which is Michael's Facebook page, and make a donation if you can. I plan on doing so soon. Michael is a wonderful, wonderful guy. One of my favorite people, one of my favorite people to interview, just a real deal guy. And needless to say, we had a ton of people calling about Van Halen, the prospects of the 40th anniversary of Van Halen, the prospects of a reunion, and so much more, and you will hear it all this week on the Eddie Trunk Podcast with Michael Anthony, coming your way next on PodcastOne.com and iTunes.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Well, there's something about TrueCar that a lot of people don't know. And what's that? Well, that's that using the TrueCar app can also help you buy a used car. In fact, there's 700, yes, 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. Whether you're looking to buy new or used, you can get upfront pricing information that empowers discounts off the list price for used cars and a better buying experience through the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. And there's over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar Certified Dealers nationwide. You'll see what other people paid for the car you want, so you can know what a fair price is and feel confident. With TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing, so you can enjoy a quick, easy buying experience. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the new or used car you want. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
This week on All of the Above with Norman Lear, Veep star Julia Louis-Dreyfus sits down with Norman and Paul.
Well, you know, there wasn't a script when I was first talking to HBO about it. There wasn't a concept. And my agent had said to me, listen, they're developing this thing at HBO about an unhappy vice president, an unhappy female vice president. And I thought to myself, well, I got to get in on this action because it's gold. And it's so amazing that nobody's done it before.
Listen today on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or on PodcastOne.com. This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, the Eddie Trunk Podcast is back, and my guest this week, one of my favorites, a founding member of Van Halen, bassist Michael Anthony. Michael Anthony, it's great to see you, my friend. Thank you so
good
much
to see
for
you
coming
too.
In.
You ask me to come in every time you're here on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I live way down south at the beach, And believe me, to get me to come out of that area and up here is a feat. But
I'm
Eddie,
honored.
I do it for you, Eddie.
I am honored.
You're
thank
my buddy,
you.
Eddie.
Likewise, man, I cannot thank you enough for doing that. I know it's a bitch with traffic out here. And so we got lucky, though. You got your daughter, so you could
my
use
daughter,
the carpool lane.
My daughter, Taylor, graciously... She offered
you,
to be
Taylor.
My carpool buddy, so.
Yeah, thank you. Don't people put, like, dummies in the car next
to
them?
Yeah, I was just
going to
say, in fact, I think there was a couple of catalog things that I'd seen where you could actually buy one of these inflatable. It looks like some guy wearing a hat and glasses.
Yeah.
That you can sit on the seat in the car next to you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Back in the early days, was traffic always so crazy in L.A., even like in the early days of Van Halen? Like when you guys would go around at rehearsal or sort of get together in the earliest days, was it the madness that it is now trying to get around?
Well,
has it gotten worse?
There was still a bit of madness, but there was always a window in the morning or the afternoon or a couple windows in the morning or afternoon that you knew that you could drive the freeways, you know, the major freeways and be able to get to where you're going and know how long it would take. Now it's kind of like... anyone's guess. You just kind of throw it up in the air. You know, it's like it could take where I was coming from, it could take me an hour to get here. It could take me 3 hours to get here. And,
wow.
and you can't predict it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, okay, so I'm either going to be late or early to everywhere that I go now.
Well, Hannah, who I appreciate Hannah setting this up, the publicist, she said to me, well, she said, Michael will probably get there around noon Pacific time. And I said, okay, but I said, you know, I go on at 11, and if he can come earlier, I'll do the whole show with him. And she said, well, and I said, I get it. I get the traffic. But when you texted me last night, I said, well, if you get there early, man, I'll be waiting on you. And you got in here about 5-10 minutes before we started.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it was great.
I couldn't believe it. In fact, the most traffic I hit was after I got off the freeway, just driving the surface streets to get here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, we got a lot to talk about with Michael, and of course our phones are already lit up because the fans love you and they want to talk to you as well.
Oh, boy.
But before some stuff from me before we get into all of this, and we should mention, too, that there is a tour coming up with Sammy Hagar and the Circle. Actually, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is like the first proper sort of tour you guys have done of consecutive dates because it's mostly been sporadic shows, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, Sammy in touring these days, you never know what he's going to want to do, you know. On one hand, he'll go, well, you know what? Let's just do like these weekend warrior things. We'll do a few shows here and then take a break and then do a few shows there and take a break. But then Sammy also finds out, well, he still has to go into his studio at home to keep his voice, you know, ready to go. And so he's like, well, that doesn't work. I said, well, let's just go out and just play the shows. Just do it.
Right.
But it's great. We're going to go out and, you know, he really wanted to go out and do a bunch of shows. And we may be adding some more shows, too, so you never know. But if you go on his website or my website, Matt Anthony's Cafe, we'll post it all up there for everyone.
Yeah, you it's amazing to me how hard... Like Sammy's still out there going for world domination. I thought he was going to slow down at some point because I've talked to him about it before. But I was like, he's coming up on 70 years old.
Yeah.
Which last time I talked to him, I said, I don't even know how you're going to handle your party in Cabo at 70. I don't know. You're going to have to expand the island or whatever. I don't know what you're going to do.
Uh-huh.
But he's coming. But he's still, you know, hitting it with doing the tequila thing or the thing with Adam Levine, the band. Solo stuff, the TV shows. I mean, the energy this guy has is incredible.
If he doesn't have all 10 of his fingers in 10 different pies, then he doesn't know what to do with himself. In fact, sometimes it seems like he needs to grow a couple more hands. So he's got 10 more fingers for all the stuff, for all the ideas that, you know, he comes up with. And I got to hand it to him, though, you know, that he... I mean, but then he also, on the other hand, he does all the charitable work and stuff like that, too.
Yeah, of
so,
course,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, people go, well, you know, he's just a big infomercial for his rum or his tequila or now his mezquila. Sam, I got to get that in for you. Santo mezquila. The stuff's good, too.
Yeah.
You know, but he turns around and equally gives back, donating to all kinds of great organizations.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's always got something that he's doing. He'll call
it's
me
amazing.
Up and go with an idea, and I'm like, Sam. Geez, why don't you sit back and enjoy some of your money, you know?
He called me. Like, I still have the voicemail, actually, which I got to follow up with him on it, because he left me a message one day. He must have just had this idea. And he goes, I got this idea. He goes, Eddie Trunk, listen, I got this idea. This is what we're going to do. He goes, we need to tell the definitive story of Van Halen, the Hagar years. He goes, and we're going to do a thing. He goes, I want you to interview me. I want to put it on TV, and I want to get it out there once and for all. I want everybody to know what's going on. We need to do this. He goes, I'm not looking to shit talk anybody or anything like that. I just want to tell the story of my time in the band, and I need to lay that out. I said, Sam, when you're ready, and you let's do it. And yeah. I got to look at the message. It was a while ago. But
no, I think now's the time, especially if you listen to some of the interviews he's doing or whatever now, you know, his whole take. In fact, right now he's saying, you know, the proper way to do a Van Halen tour, he's saying, let's do it with Dave and myself.
Yeah, well, you know? and Tom Consolo was here yesterday, mm-hmm. who manages the Circle and Sammy and everything. And Tom was talking to me, and he told me that Sammy even said on his radio show, because Sammy truly is the king of all media and everything. I mean, Sammy's got a million things going on. But Sammy said that Tom told me that Sammy even laid out how the set list would work, and that I thought it would be like, and this is all hypothetical, but I thought it would be like an hour of one version, an hour of another version, and then a jam at the end. But he said, no, Sammy actually wants to do it like two songs, hand the mic to Roth. He comes out two songs and like a baton going back and
right,
forth.
Right, right. In fact, he called me. I helped out with a couple of songs on that radio show that he did. But you know what? The funny thing, I mean, you're just mentioning that if we did like an hour with one singer and an hour with another singer, you never know. There might be a lot of people that don't want to come the first hour or don't want to come for the second singer or whatever.
Right.
This way you mix it
That's
up. And everybody's got to stay for everything.
That's a good point.
And believe me, if something like that came to fruition, I guarantee there wouldn't be one person who would leave that show disappointed with anything, with either singer, probably.
And listen, when you think about it, next year is the 40th anniversary of the formation of Van Halen, which is unbelievable. But this is all great to talk about, and as a fan, it gets me excited, and obviously it seems that you would be excited about it and Sammy would be excited about it, but we all know that unless that guy sitting up there in the Hollywood Hills somewhere right now has an interest in doing this, we're just talking.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, something like this would not happen unless everybody was equally excited to do it or whatever, because you know, you don't want to go out and, you know, and have it be work. You don't want to do it and have people say, well, they're doing it just for the money. I want to truly go out there and just kick ass and give the people everything, you know? And that's what it would have to be.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, what better time to do it if there was a time to do it? Because, again, celebrate 40 years, celebrate both eras of the band. Everybody's getting older. We see so many of these guys dropping by the wayside, unfortunately. It's like, man, if everybody is still above ground and healthy and doing well, why not just do it right one
yeah,
time?
Yeah, exactly, while everybody still can.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, too. Talk about Sammy and him coming up on 70, but as you well know, being in the band with him, He's still a powerhouse, man. Yeah. It's amazing what he can still do.
It's all the way he looks at life and keeps himself in shape and keeps his voice in shape, and he's still kicking ass, I got to say. And that's great, because I kind of look at that and I think, I mean, I'm only going to be 63, but I look at him and go, God, look what he's doing at 70, you know, and, you know.
It's inspiring.
It is.
It really is.
It is.
It really is. You know, last time you were on, you told the story on this show about having speaking of birthdays, I believe it was on a birthday that you had some exchange with Alex Van Halen on a boat or something.
Yeah, it wasn't on a birthday. It was actually through a mutual friend of ours that came to visit me.
Right. Have you had any other communication?
No, with Alex, no, actually I have not. But, you know, and then people were going, well, why don't you call him back? Call him back and, you know, and tell him it was great talking to whatever. I said, you know what? No, I just, you know, we had a great conversation and I'll just let it lie and, you know, and see what happens. You know, because I don't know what his situation is or whatever. I don't know if there's something keeping him from calling me back or whatever. So, but I'm not going to speculate.
Right, right. Now, tying in on some Van Halen stuff, and again, I texted you my condolences on your grandson.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that's a tough thing, but you're going to do something really cool about raising some money here for him, right?
Yeah,
talk a little bit about that.
It's actually
walk.
the first is the first one, first annual. It's called Walk LA. sponsored by, you know, it's held with by Children's Hospital Los Angeles. And I'll tell you, I mean, just seeing on TV, on the news, you hear about Children's Hospital and whatever and what they do, but you really cannot fully appreciate and admire what they do over there unless you are there seeing what happens. And whereas I hope I never have to be there again,
right,
I'm glad that I was there just to see what they do there. And boy, the doctors and the staff, they are truly dedicated to helping every child that comes through that door. And it's a great thing. It's a great cause. And, you know, obviously with the passing of our grandson, it was great. It's great to be able to give back to the hospital that tried to do so much, you know. And so we formed a team. It's called Rex and the Heartbeaters because his name was Rex Michael. And we're gonna go for it. We got a huge team, and we're gonna walk, and it's great, you know. And it's like, you know, it's not donated to me, donate through my name or our team or whatever, but it goes straight to the hospital, and it's just for a great place that treat kids.
So the walk is when? Is it in June?
It's June 17th, and I believe it originates in Griffith Park. And if anybody is interested in the walk or donating or any of that stuff, I mean, if you want to donate to our team or through me, you can go to my Facebook page, Matt Anthony's Cafe, or else you can go straight to the, I think it's chla.org, Children's Hospital Los Angeles.org, and they explain everything that's going on.
And that will sponsor your team, so to speak, and help raise the funds.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, it all goes obviously to the hospital, but
right.
Especially since now, the other week, I'm sure a lot of people heard about Jimmy Kimmel's son,
mm-hmm.
Bill, that was born. He was actually born with a similar heart problem.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they were able to, you know, successfully, you know, save him, and but it was like the same. A lot of the same team and surgeon operated on him that operated on our grandson.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to, if Jimmy's out there listening or anybody who knows him, just tell him that my heart goes to him and I know what he's going through, and I hope everything turns out great for his son.
Yeah, and maybe Jimmy is I don't know Jimmy, but we have some mutual friends, but maybe he's a guy that actually could get behind the walk. You know, it'd be
yeah.
great if he could do something on his TV show about the walk or be a part of it,
yeah.
maybe do the walk
yeah.
with you
come
or
on,
something.
Come on, Jimmy. Chicken,
let's get him out of
chicken
there.
Foot played on your show.
Yeah. Yeah, come on, Jimmy.
No, I he might have already heard about it by now or whatever, but you know.
Yeah.
It's just a great thing, and like I said, once you've experienced firsthand what they do there, you really can appreciate what that hospital does, and you know, it's going to be a fun time, you know, and we're going to raise a lot of money. We got a lot of money already raised for our team.
Well, speaking of that, there was a lot of people noticed in the last week or two that made the rounds that when you have this donation page up, I guess it can, and I've seen this before where you see who the donation is from.
Right.
And a lot of people, a big, because you know how the Van Halen fans are, they're looking for any hope and anything, were very interested to see that there was a $10,000 donation made from one Mr. David Roth, or David Lee Roth.
Right, right.
And what can you tell us about that? Because there was some speculation amongst people, well, people can put any name they want if they want to be anonymous, and it might not even actually be him. Were you able to confirm it was him?
Well, I'll tell you, because I the same way, I check the donation page every single morning when I wake up just to see how the team's doing and, you know, raising money and people that are donating. And I saw this one morning, David Roth, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't, what? No, this can't be right. And then what happens is an email gets sent to me personally saying a donation's been made on your behalf by David Roth, $10,000. And so I can email back to thank the donors. This email went to I won't say who, but it went to a business management agency. That's what the donation came through. And I actually emailed back and said, Dave, is this you? I hope it is, you know. And I thanked him for the generous donation and from the bottom of my heart. Even if Dave, if you're listening, thank you. But I sent the email and I said, here's my email address. Email me back. Let me know it's you, because I would really like to talk to you. Just thank you,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I got an email back a couple days later from the same business management agency, but you know, I just said, hi Michael, it's David. Sorry about your loss. and I'll be in touch. So, but I can pretty much confirm that it was him.
Wow, that's amazing. And you, when you haven't had any dialogue with him in how long?
The last time I actually spoke with Dave was when that Sam and Dave tour in the early 2000s happened. And I came out for some of those shows and jammed with Sammy and tried to get Dave up there to jam with us too. But that's probably the last time I spoke with him on some of those shows.
Wow.
So it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while, but that's a nice gesture. And
it is.
You know, it's it's again, I mean, it's a nice gesture for we can talk all we want and we all are going to want to talk about and love talking about Van Halen miss certain versions of Van Halen, let's just say. But at the same token, this is the important stuff. I mean, when you can go and help kids and raise money and raise funds for people going through real life stuff. I mean, it's a really cool thing.
Yeah, that's part of what, you know, having the celebrity can do. I mean, obviously you can go out and promote other things, you know, whether it's products or whatever, but you can also use it to do gestures like that, you know, and help promote stuff like that. And that's why I really wanted to be involved, pardon me, with this walk that we're doing. Because I asked my daughter, I said, how public do you want to be with this? You know, because if I come out that I'm doing this and ask for donations, you know, it could explode over the internet. Like, you know, it's gotten out. And at first she was kind of hesitant. And then she called me back the next day and said, yeah, you know what? Go ahead, because we want to raise the money. So I said, okay. So, you know, so I put it on my Facebook page and put it out there and doing a few interviews to, you know, raise the awareness and the money.
Sure. And if that's the end game, because you want to raise money for a great cause, then you're in a position to be able to reach a lot of people. And there's a lot of people that are fans of yours. And there's a lot of people that, you know, maybe have some money and want to make a donation and feel good about it, that they have the disposable income, they can do it. So why not get the word out there as much as it can to see where it comes from.
Exactly. So. And I want to thank, I'm saving every single donation that I get with the thank you email, links that I can go to, and I'm going to try to find some kind of gracious way to thank everybody that donated to me. I don't know. Maybe I'll give them each a bottle of hot sauce, signed hot sauce. Now, or something. I know, but
well,
that could break me. No, but anyway, if any of those people are listening right now, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you very much for this donation, because it'll really help with the legacy, the short time my grandson was here, and also help what the hospital's doing. Thank you very much.
So just one more time for people to know, if they want, because there's still plenty of time to make a donation, because the walk is until June. So where do they go again to do it?
They can either go to the website directly, Children's Hospital LA website, or if you go on my Facebook page, Matt Anthony's Cafe, I have a link on there that'll take you directly to my page.
Okay.
That you can donate, make the donation through me.
Now, for people that don't know, and I've talked about it quite a bit, I wore the shirt on TV. I mean, I love Michael as a musician and as a person, but I got to tell you, this guy is making my favorite hot sauce in the world. And you know, you were the first guy. Now a lot of people, there's a lot of, like, quote-unquote celebrity hot sauces.
Mm-hmm.
The first two people that ever gave me a bottle of hot sauce that were musicians, Joe Perry was the first guy, and then shortly afterwards, you. And the funny thing about Joe, when he gave me his hot sauce, I was at his house, his studio, and he gave it to me, and this was his first bottle of it, and it's a picture of him playing guitar on the cover of the hot sauce.
That's a Boneyard Brew, I think it was called, right?
Yeah. So he said to me, he gave it to me, and then I saw him a few months later, and he said to me, so what'd you think of the hot sauce? And I kind of thought, oh, man, I didn't know what to say. He goes, well, did you not like it? I go, no, I just never opened it. He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, the bottle's so cool, and you're Joe Perry, and you gave it to me. It's kind of on my rock wall, you know, and my stuff. And he's like, he gives me another bottle. He goes, look, and his picture wasn't on. He goes, you see what I did? He goes, well, he goes, more and more people I asked who I gave the sauce to gave me the same answer. Well, they didn't want to disrupt the bottle, and they wanted to hold it as a souvenir. He said, so now I made one without my picture so that you can open it. And it's just, and I was like, okay. And his sauce is very good, but your stuff, and I have the extra hot that you sent me and the regular hot. But the Matt Anthony's Cafe stuff is killer, and it is truly my favorite hot sauce. I put it on everything, and I love it.
Well, thank you, Eddie. That's how we designed it, to go it's not like a Mexican food thing, you know? I like it just as well on eggs or pizza or any of that stuff.
Yeah, it's great on everything, and this is something that you've been doing now for a number of years, right?
Yeah, actually, 2004 was when we first came out with it, and incidentally, it was kind of because of Joe Perry. that I got into it.
Oh, really?
That people were saying, hey, you know, Joe's. Yeah, and he had a longtime tech. His name's Jim Service.
Uh-huh.
That actually gave me a bottle of it. And it was, I think, a special bottle that he did. And it had one of his picks embedded into the label on the bottle. And I said, oh, shit. What a great thing to do. I said, people will buy this just to have a Joe Perry guitar pick. You know?
Right, but they may not open
it. I went to the same company that was making his hot sauce in the beginning and talked with them about doing it. And we really didn't hit it off in the way I wanted to do my sauce. I really wanted to be involved in doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just waited until the right company came by. And it was actually at one of the NAMM conventions out here in Anaheim that Mike and Diane's Gourmet Kitchen is what they're called. You know, they came and they said, hey, you know, we have a couple base sauces. Help us create a sauce. And so my sauce is actually, you know, it's not something I just stamp my name on it.
So, oh, yeah.
Hey, this is my stuff. I'm in on everything that has to do with this sauce, which is great.
Yeah, it really is great stuff. And where and people listening, where can they get the sauce? Is it mattanthonyscafe.com?
You can get it through my website, mattanthonyscafe.com. There are, if you're here on the West Coast, Bristol Farms.
Yeah,
markets,
I see those all
they,
over.
They all carry it. Because I work with a lot with some of their people, and I actually have a new manufacturer and some new marketing people, and we're getting ready to really expand this. I'm not going to say right now, but I have a couple of meetings with CEOs of a couple of huge restaurant chains and whatever. So I figured I get a little more time on my hands now, so why not, you know,
yeah,
put a little more time in the hot sauce. I'm not looking to become a millionaire making it, but it's just cool to see something like that that I really helped create, you know, a lot of people. People like yourself like it, Eddie.
Yeah, but it's genuinely good. I mean, if it was just a thing because, oh, it's a rock guy sauce, I mean, okay, great, I'll throw it on the shelf, whatever.
Yeah.
But I truly, truly reach for it. And I told you off the air when you first came in, I told my wife today, she said, so who's coming in the show today? I said, Michael. She goes, oh, you love his hot sauce. Like, you know, nothing about 40 years of great Van Halen records. She's like, oh, you love that hot sauce. I always see you going for it. I was like, yeah, it's right front and center in my fridge. So
there you go, Eddie. Hot sauce for you for life. Whenever you need it. You just text me and I'll send it to you.
Running with the Devil. Don't. Who cares about that song? It's all about the hot sauce. Who cares about the vocals, the bass, all this stuff? No, forget.
There
Chicken
we
Foot. We're here for hot sauce. It's great to have Michael Anthony here with us, talking about all sorts of stuff, from hot sauce to Chicken Foot to Van Halen, of course, to everything else. The great charity event that he has coming up as well that you guys should please check out and help out if you can. And, yeah, so Chicken Foot, you got at least one song done.
Yeah, how about that?
I know there's a great conflict between doing a record and not doing a record, to the point that last time I saw Joe, he even said to me, put a bug in Sammy's ear. Come on, let's just do a record.
Well, what we need to do is we need to put a bomb underneath Anthony Kiedis. No, I'm just kidding. We need to sabotage the Chili Peppers tour so we can get Chad back. You know, we decided, you know, I mean, I'm great friends with Kenny Aronoff. In fact, we played a gig together last week. But the Chicken Foot, we want all four original members to do it. And for some reason, getting all four members together at the same time, you know, I guess I think I was actually thinking driving over here because I knew we'd talk about it, that when the Chili Peppers tour is over, because they tour forever when they go out and tour now, but they'll probably take a huge break. And
yeah.
Chad, he's the kind of guy, he'll go home and sleep and have a cigarette, and then he'll be ready to do, you know, he'll be ready for it. So
right. So maybe there's a window.
So there could be a window. But yeah, we didn't, you know what? I think it was more like we didn't want things to just kind of die on Chicken Foot, because it is something that we all do want to do again when everybody can do it.
Right.
And we had, Joe had this demo for this song that turned out to be Divine Termination that we put on there. And there's actually a couple other demos that Joe sent, some guitar riffs also, so you never know. But we decided to, Sammy, that song kind of spoke to Sammy, and he wanted to finish that song, so we all did it. And the thing that kind of sucks is that we all kind of did it separately, too. I mean, Sammy and I were together in the studio. I flew up north to do that, but, you know, Chad was working, so he did his part when he could or whatever. But, you know, we just wanted to put something out there so people know that Chicken Foot is not dead. You know, people go, hey, yeah, one album, two albums, and you got a best of. It's like, well, you know, thank God we had this song that we put out, because how many times can you repackage?
Yeah. well, you got this song, and there's live stuff on there, too. There is some different stuff. I mean, you do it. There is a few other things.
Yeah,
on
we pull from some of the stuff that we had, because this was a band where, I mean, from the first minute we all four walked into the studio to do this back in 2008 or 2009, we recorded and we videoed everything in the studio and whatever, so that, you know, because we wanted to have it well documented. And that's one thing I kind of am sad about a lot of the early Van Halen stuff, is that we did not document studio stuff or a lot of stuff that would have been really cool to document that, you know, I don't know if it was just we never thought about doing it or what. I mean, we used to record all our shows, so, I mean, there's some great bootlegs out there. I've got a whole box full of bootlegs that people have given me that some are really almost record quality.
Really?
For Van Halen shows. But, you know, a lot of, like, the studio stuff, you know, a lot of that behind-the-scenes stuff like, I know I like to watch if I've seen a band do something, you know.
Yeah, if you think about it, there really is nothing that's ever come out that there was cameras in there or video. I mean, obviously, back then, late 70s, early 80s, cameras weren't as readily available. And now everybody could shoot HD on their phone,
exactly.
So it's a little different. But still, there are – you'll look at stuff that Pink Floyd did in the 60s, and there's video of them in the studio or whatever. But, yeah, I never – there's nothing like that with you guys.
Yeah, and I don't know why we didn't do it, you know? Either we didn't think about it. We always thought about recording on stage because, you know, we were always thinking about the live show and what we could do to make something better, or, you know, we're rushing this or dragging on a song, so we would always record the show so that we could see it.
Film it?
We have filmed quite a few of them, and a lot of that stuff, I don't know where a lot of that stuff ended up when Dave left and the band just kind of, you know, when we regrouped,
man, that,
you know,
would be amazing. If there's pro shot footage of, like, the early tours.
Yeah. Now, I know, like, in 1980, you know, there's a couple shows that we did, like, at the Capitol Center and you know, different places that we actually had the arena shoot for us. You know, if they had the cameras there and they said, hey, for this fee, we'll shoot the show for you and you can have, you know, have that. And so we've got a handful of those.
Yeah, some of the stuff, I remember some of the old MTV videos from, I think, the Fair Warning record were live concert clips.
Yeah.
I think there was, like, Unchained. Remember, maybe there was that one where Alex would hit the, like, the gong on fire or whatever, hit it. I remember seeing that video all the time.
Yeah.
It was just a live
concert.
There's
a couple where he lit his hair on fire, too, but we didn't put those out. He would turn to his tech, Greg, and say, pointing, going, my hair. And Greg sitting next to him smoking a joint or something with his thumb up going, yeah, it looks great.
He really caught his hair on fire.
Oh, a couple of times, yeah, yeah. But, yeah, you know, because in MTV, they always want, you know, when we did Pretty Woman, that was the one real storyline, that and Hot for Teacher, that MTV, we let them talk us into doing, or a couple of the directors, because we always thought, you know, we're performing, we're a live band, we're a band, we're not a bunch of actors, so we're not going to get up there and act goofy, which, well, you know... Pretty Woman, they talked us into acting goofy on camera, but we...
And there was some controversy with the Pretty Woman video. Wasn't it censored or something at some point?
Well, we had these two little
people,
little people, and then the woman at the end was like a transsexual that we used in the video. And back then, MTV, you know, was kind of like, oh, you don't do stuff like that. And I think they showed it once or twice on MTV, and then they would play it like at 2 a.m. every now and then, because of what is, like, you know, nothing now was a big deal to show that on you know, on TV.
Right. Yeah, it's I remember there being some hubbub about that at the time.
Yeah, at the end of the song, she whatever it was, whips the wig off, and it's a dude, you know, which it really was a.
Yeah. Of the videos that Van Halen made, what do you have a favorite that you remember shooting? Imagine Hot for Teacher.
Well, Hot for Teacher was a blast shooting. And incidentally, my wife, Sue, woke up with me when I was getting ready to shoot for the first day. And that's when my oldest daughter, Alicia, was conceived.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Bad Your mistake. Daughter, Taylor, right now is like,
yeah,
she's
well,
like, has her hand in
that's
her face.
What, that's
like,
one thing I know.
Didn't
well,
need that information.
My daughter, Taylor, was when my wife came to visit us when we played New Orleans. There was a thing we did, a free jam in Dallas, Texas, we did the night before, I think, or the couple days before we played in New Orleans. And my wife and I went out and partied all night. And that was my other daughter, Taylor.
Taylor's right now, she's miserable that she decided to be your carpool partner. I got to go sit in here and I don't ever hear about this. I could talk to you forever about all sorts of things. We did. I did buy an egg burrito downstairs, which I've cut in half. We do have the Matt Anthony hot sauce. We are going to have some. We should probably do it during the next commercial break, so we're not chomping and sweating on the air.
Pieces of burrito all over the microphone. That's not
so good. We do have a little breakfast slash lunch, as it's noon here on the West Coast, that we will sample some of the sauce. Michael's got a new one here that I have not had, but I promise and I pride myself on giving my audience the chance to engage with this show on a lot of levels, and I could go on forever about so many things with you, but I am going to turn things over to the great listeners to fire away at Michael Anthony. Yeah, Are you ready for that?
I just want to warn them. I'm not. Don't try to coerce me into talking smack about anybody or anything.
Yeah.
I don't do that these days.
All right. Michael Anthony is here, and we are going to the phones. And I guess we'll start. What better place than in line number one? And by the way, before we forget, again, go see The Circle, Sammy Hagar in The Circle, which, of course, is with Michael Anthony, Vic Johnson, Jason Bonham, and you guys go out on tour.
Well, we start our first show is June 2nd. In Oklahoma, but we're going to be all over East Coast, West Coast, Midwest. So
yeah, I haven't seen The Circle yet. Believe it or not,
you gotta.
You guys haven't done much near me. I think you did Atlantic City was the closest.
Yeah,
but I looked at the routing. And I think there is some stuff closer, so I absolutely have to get out to a show.
Definitely, it's a fun time.
It's a great band. Yeah, I think I saw I saw the seeds of The Circle being planted. Because I was at that show in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale, at the Hard Rock, where you were playing with Sammy, and Jason got up and played Pound Cake and some stuff.
Right, right, he did.
That's when the sort of seed was planted for the band, I remember.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I did see an early version, pre-Circle of The Circle, and it was badass. I mean, it was great.
Oh, so. We're much worse now.
All right, let's start on line number one. Al in Jersey. Go ahead, Al. You're on with the great Michael Anthony.
I like that.
Hey, guys. What's up?
Al, how you doing, man?
Hey, Mike, man. It's a real pleasure to talk to you. A real honor, man. Van Halen.
Oh, good talking to you, too.
Van Halen was the first band that ever made me want to pick up an instrument and be a musician. So I thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing that, man.
Great.
My question is... on You're No Good, first track on Van Halen 2, the bass intro on that, the little snippet that opens up, I always heard that that's like a snippet of like a longer bass solo you did. Is that true?
I did kind of extend that a little bit on stage, but no, we were actually just looking for Ted Templeman, who produced that record. He was just looking for just a quick little intro. And so, like, you know, I was big into all the old stomp box cheesy effects and whatever. And so I got some kind of a flanger or something like that and just kind of like went, bleep, 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 bleep. And Ted goes, great, we'll use that. But I think it's a cool way to open
a record. It's really, it really sets a tone. It's really kind of cool, I think.
Yeah. But thanks for asking. No, that isn't actually part of a bigger piece. So that was just that little piece that we did.
I just want to say it sounds great blaring out a 15-inch Sharon Vegas in my car. So.
Great.
Thank you, Al, for the call. You and many others cranked up Van Halen and still do, absolutely. My home state representing here while I'm on the West Coast. Brian, again in Jersey. Hey, Brian, what's going on, man?
What's up, Ed?
Hey, Brian, you're on with Michael Anthony.
All right, man, very good. Mike, you are a huge influence on me. I'm a bass player. I've been playing since I was about 10. Just the way you lay it down, my favorite, you playing in Mean Streets, the guitar solo. The way you lay it down, dude, is sick. It is awesome. I love it. It's simple, and it's great. I'm hanging out with my son, JB, in the driveway. Say hi, JB.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing, man?
You're in the driveway, so you can listen. I'm assuming because you have the radio in the car, so you got to sit in the driveway to hear the show, right?
Exactly, right, man. Just like a good New Jersey boy, I got my trunk open. Trunk, no pun intended.
There you go.
The show.
Well, that's great. Thanks a lot. You know, because I tell you, you know, playing behind a guitarist like Eddie Van Halen, you know, some people go, well, how come you don't, you know, you just kind of lay back sometimes or whatever, and you got to do what's right for the track, and, you know, you got a fantastic guitarist like Eddie. It's like you got to lay the rhythm down. I mean, you know, sure, you want to go off and showboat and do all your stuff, but, you know, sometimes you got to put that,
I mean,
got to anchor it down.
you and Alex are just so great together. And, I mean, really anybody you play with, dude, you're just phenomenal. And I've always been a fan of you. Your attitude and the way you carry yourself is just, it's just cool, man. You're a regular dude, and you come off that way, and I appreciate that because more people should be like that in rock.
Let me tell you, Brian, it's all an act. he came in here with an entourage of 15 people. He asked, the demands he had to get him to this studio are unlike anything I've ever seen before, this guy. So don't fall, you know, the nice guy, regular guy act from Michael Anthony, it's all a big act.
Come on, Eddie. I thought I paid you off not to talk about that, too. I didn't pay you enough?
I couldn't be more what you see is what you get with this guy. So absolutely, you're 100% spot on. Again, Jersey representing.
Oh, wow.
Tommy,
Eddie.
Tommy in Atlantic City. Tommy, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, boys? How you doing? Michael, great to talk to you. Big fan. Wish you were back in with Van Halen. I got two questions for you. One is, do you think when back when Sammy was in the band the first time, do you think when he did that solo album that he had to fulfill his contract, do you think that was one of the turning points of Eddie souring just a little bit on Sammy and, you know, the whole thing back then of doing, you can't be in two bands and you can't, you know, oh, he wants to do solo albums. And now it's kind of the norm to do
but
that.
But Eddie was on that record.
Right, yeah.
Hold on, Tommy, didn't Eddie play, Eddie played bass on it, right?
Eddie played bass on that record. I actually even, I didn't get any credits because we wanted to keep it Sammy's thing, but I actually sang background on a couple of those songs on that album,
right,
too. But no, that was something that we all knew about right off the bat that Sammy was contractually obligated to do. So he was going to have to do that anyway. So that's why Eddie jumped on board and he goes, "Hey, I'll produce it for you and I'll, you know, I'll play bass on it," because we didn't want it to be Sammy at first was going, "Well, I'll sing on it and have you Al and Mike, and, you know, it'll be like Van Halen, but it'll be my solo record." But then we decided not to do that, but so Eddie decided to do his thing on it. And like I said, I sang on a couple of the songs too. But no, that was something that we all knew about, you know, going into everything.
Is that you on Give to Live?
No, but if you listen to Boys Night Out, that's one of them. You'd hear the high, Boys Night Out.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah.
He just needed, like, you know, the high trumpet part or something. I don't know.
Let's go to Miami and say hello to Brian.
All right.
Hey, Brian, you're on.
Hey, how you doing? It's a pleasure to talk to you, Michael Anthony. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
All right.
Hey, listen, I just wanted to ask you a question. It pertains to Eddie. Was he just like a natural musician, or did he have to practice at his craft all the time? Because every time I saw you guys 15 times, like half Dave, half Sammy, and I am not in the camp of I have to switch sides. I mean, choose sides. I loved everything you did with Dave and Sammy.
Thank you.
So was it as natural to him as it seemed, or did he like practice night and day? I've always been curious about that my whole life.
He would practice night and day, but I don't think he needed to practice night and day because, you know, some people are just – it seems like they're born gifted musicians, which I'm sure Eddie will tell you that nobody is. But, yeah, this guy was like – he had a guitar in his hand all the time. And as he was coming up with all these different things, like I'm sure you probably heard the story when he came up with his two-hand tapping thing, would have to Dave would always tell him to play with his back to the audience because he didn't want other – Dave said, "You don't want other guitar players copping that." And there were actually a couple of people. We used to rehearse in this little garage in Pasadena here, and a couple of times we'd open the door to take a break from rehearsing, and there would be a couple of these friends of Eddie's that play guitar standing there at the door listening to what he's doing. But no, I mean, he always has a guitar in his hand.
When you first met him, and was he at that level already where you're just, as you yourself as a musician, are you like, what is this guy doing? Like, did you recognize immediately that this was this game-changing guitar player, or was he a more traditional player at that point?
When I first saw them, it's funny because they were him and Alex and a guy by the name of Mark Stone who was playing bass. It was just them three, and they were playing on a field. It was like a fair that was going on at the high school that I was going to. And the one thing that I was really impressed with Eddie, because back then, you know, they played like all the Cream stuff, all the Who stuff, and what was really impressive that he could play all that stuff note for note if he wanted to, that Clapton and all those guys were playing. And I after playing in the band with him, then all of a sudden you see him start developing, you know, the tapping and all the stuff that would really, the innovative stuff. But he was just a great guitar player. You know, back then, you know, you're either really good or you're not really good. I don't know. And he was really good. He really impressed me every time that I heard him play.
And for you, you're in a band, a single guitar band the whole time. So as a bass player, you touched on this earlier. I mean, you really have to make sure you're holding down your end because you don't have a rhythm guitar player in the band. You don't have a second guy. You've got a guy who's a mad genius professor guitar player, mm-hmm. but still, was there ever a thought in the earliest days of Van Halen to having another guy on stage, to having a rhythm guitar player?
There had always been talk about it. In fact, before I joined the band, there was a short time where they had a keyboard player in the band, actually.
Oh, wow.
And I forget the guy's name, and it wasn't that long, but they did have a keyboard player for a while. But, you know, in fact, the bands that I've played, and even before Van Halen, I always came back to being in a band with just a guitar, bass, and drummer because I always thought there was just the communication is much easier. I don't have to count. You don't have to, you know, there isn't as much stuff that has to be planned out. You know, you can just look at each other and just really go off the handle. Like, you know, like Cream and The Who are two of the bands that could famously do that. And you're like going, where the hell are they in the song? And then all of a sudden, psh, they're all right there together. You know?
Right, right. Let's continue with the calls. So many great calls. So many people want to talk to Michael. We'll go to Pennsylvania right now. Say hello to Jeff. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Jeff.
Hey, guys. How you doing today? What's going
right.
on, Michael Anthony? How you doing, brother?
Not much, man. I'm just chilling with Eddie.
That's a beautiful thing. He's a great dude.
yeah, he is.
I had the privilege and punishment of seeing VH back in 2004 in Philadelphia.
why was it a punishment? Jeff, why was it a punishment?
Let's hear your take on that.
it was my first experience, and Eddie just, you know, we all know how Eddie was that year.
Oh, wait a minute. What year were you talking about?
2004.
Oh.
This was your first Van Halen concert?
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah, that's not, yeah, I get what you're saying now because I was at one of those shows too in New Jersey, and I get what you're saying. That was not good.
Yeah,
we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
In the spirit of Michael wanting to keep everything on the up and up and positive, we will leave it at that. So go ahead, Jeff. What did you want to say?
So I just have a couple quick ones for you. Basically, what do you think is the greatest Van Halen work of art, and what is your favorite song to play live?
The greatest Van Halen what?
The greatest Van Halen record? You think is that what your question was, Jeff?
Yeah, sorry, I asked that pretty stupid.
Do you have a favorite Van Halen record and a favorite song to play live?
Oh, man.
That's like,
I mean, I can give you a favorite out of each incarnation of Van Halen, you know. I mean, they're all good. You know, right off the top of my head, Mean Streets was always fun to play live. And then, I don't know. They're all fun to play live. I can't really pick one out that, you know, on one given night, when we play Love Walks In with Sammy, I get goosebumps the whole song, you know. And another night it'll be something else. But
yeah, if there's a young kid listening to this right now who's, you know, never really, maybe he's 15 and he's hearing about this band Van Halen, where would you tell him if he was going to get his first Van Halen record? Which one would you tell him to get? First one?
I would say the first one. Yeah. Because just how pure and raw it was, mistakes. I can point out mistakes in our first two or three Van Halen records, little mistakes.
Really?
That Ted Templeman would say, leave it in there. You know, the vibe was happening or whatever. And, you know, it might be something that you don't really catch, but then...
Can you give us a couple?
No.
You won't say it?
No, I'm not going to say it because a couple of them might be
me. Who's making them?
Oh! One or two of them might be me.
Isn't there a statute of limitations or something? It's been 35, 40 years.
I'd have to think to look at them. But we used to like, you know, it was kind of like we would always go for the vibe. And if that was happening, you know, it was just leave it. Whereas, you know, later on you go, well, you know, if we get a really great drum track, we can maybe redo this part of the guitar or redo the bass or redo whatever. But back then it was like, you know, you're in a room together and boom, you play. If somebody really screwed up something, you stop the song and we would start it again.
See, that's amazing. And I've said this publicly. I've said this in interviews I've done. I've said this to you. To me, the first, the early Van Halen records, and I don't mean that with any disrespect to the later ones because I do like most of them, but the early Van Halen records, to me, are as important and will be looked back on, if they're not already, as pivotal and as important and as timeless as like Led Zeppelin's records yeah. are. I really believe that. It's the American Led Zeppelin in that way, that you put on those early records, they don't sound dated at all to me. They would just sound like a band playing live in your face, raw, ripping. And you know, we had Dave Navarro was on this show on mm-hmm. Monday, and he came in and he's like, all I want to talk about is Van Halen. Because he's just such a fan. So we spent a lot of time talking about uh-huh. Van Halen. And I've talked to a lot of guitar players who have said this to me. Jason Hook said this to me on my TV show. A number of guys. And when they talk about the definitive, from a guitar playing standpoint, mm-hmm. the definitive record to them, surprisingly, you know which one they always say?
Which one?
Fair Warning.
Fair Warning?
Yeah. That's the guitarist guitar record. And when Dave was here yesterday, I'm not a musician, but he said that's when Eddie started doing drop D tuning and all mm-hmm. this stuff. So whatever from a musician-y standpoint is going on, Fair Warning is a record they really point
Fair
to.
Fair Warning is probably, might even be my favorite all around of the Dave era records. And probably exactly for like what Dave was saying, you know, the drop D tuning, we were trying some, you know, different stuff sonically that was just sounding heavy and big, you know.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, when we came out with 5150 with Sammy, to me it was kind of like, with that record, it was kind of like the same thing all over again, like the first Van Halen record with Dave, because we were fired, you know, after everything that we went through and Dave leaving the band and everything, all of a sudden it was like another that spark, which you never know if you'll ever find that again. We found it with Sammy in a big way. I mean, he came to the studio. I still have the cassette tape with the demos that we did, which a few of those songs that we had music for, and just blew us all away when Sammy came in and jammed with us. Pardon me. And I think it was like, you know, we again went in and we're like, we're playing live, you know. Obviously, you know, there'll be an overdub here and there, but it was basically a really great time just playing live as a band in the studio.
Yeah, and you can hear that on that record. Yeah. I mean, right from the top, I remember getting 5150, and I mean, I was a huge Sammy fan before he was in the band, but just the whole open, him just introducing himself, hello, I mean, yeah. There you go.
And good enough, that was one of the songs that he jammed with us when we first got together, and some of the lyric, actually, that he was just coming off the top of his head made it to that song in the final song.
Hey, one more thing from me before I go back to the phones while we're talking about the catalog and the different eras. The one thing that obviously kind of gets glossed over a lot is Van Halen 3, the record with Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always, Gary's a friend, and I've always kind of defended Gary for his time in Van Halen, because although I agree that it's not a record I listen to on a regular basis, and it's a record that lost me as well musically, but I think Gary unfairly gets the brunt of that. I think a lot of it's blamed on him. And my position on it has always been, he's a new guy in the band. How much could he have swayed? I mean, I don't think he made all the decisions that went into making that record
yeah.
as a new guy. What's
yeah.
your take
you know,
on
I,
all that?
I love Gary, too. I stay in touch with Gary, and I think he's a great guy. And we had a blast when we went out on that tour, partly because Gary wanted to sing all the early Van Halen stuff, too. He's like, I want to do all of it. But, no, Gary walked into a very strenuous situation that Van Halen was in. Alex was going through a hard time. He was going through a divorce right then. There was a lot of stuff that Gary just fell into joining the band, and I don't think it was the ideal time for Gary. I'm sure he'll tell you that too, you know,
right.
to join this band. It wasn't a total joyous time because there was a lot of personal stuff going on within the band
right.
when he joined. But I love Gary, and we had a great time. Him and I, we hung out every day when we were on tour.
That record, do you ever listen to that record? Do you have any you know, musically, did when you were making it and you were when that record was being recorded, were you like, this might not work?
Well, you know, we pulled in at that point. Eddie was became really good friends with a guy by the name of Mike Post, who ended up producing
Hill Street Blues or something.
Yeah, producing the record, and things got, you know, things would get a little off track. Pardon me, like I said, you know, there'd be times where we'd be trying to record a track, and after two takes, we got to take a break because Alex's lawyer's on the phone.
Oh, wow.
Or this or that happens. And we actually, as a band in the studio, which we always, like we said before, took pride in us playing live in the studio, there was only a few songs that we actually played together as a band in the studio on that record.
Right.
And I, you know, not to get into it, because there was a lot of tension, a lot of things were happening during that record. And like I said, it was not a good time at all for Gary to be joining a band, because he jumped into a big drama is what he did.
Yeah, and I
felt bad for him.
I think very unfairly gets blamed for that record. And I had heard demos that were being worked on of what would have been a second record with Gary if he would have, mm-hmm. if it would have stayed. And they were way better, actually.
Yeah, there were a couple of things. You know, obviously, you know, because Gary, you know, you have to spend time with each other and then become comfortable or whatever. And, you know, there was a lot of stuff that Gary was told to sing on that record, let's say.
Right.
Or the way he sang or the melodies that he sang, you know, were not Gary singing naturally, because I was always a big fan of Extreme, you know.
Yeah.
That's where I first met Gary and Nuno and right. and those guys, and I knew Gary was a great singer, but to me Gary wasn't able to be Gary on that record.
Right. Talking live with Michael Anthony, just great stuff here. We know the lines are jammed. We're going to come back to you guys on the phones in a second. Again, check out the Sammy Hagar and the Circle, which of course includes Michael Anthony, Jason Bonham, and Vic Johnson going out on tour this summer. Go to the respective websites to look for a date near you. Check out Michael's sauce. Go to Matt Anthony's Cafe online and check that out. Incredible hot sauce. Great stuff that he has. And most importantly, above everything maybe, is check out and help if you can with the walk that Michael has coming up in June. Again, go to his Facebook page for the direct link if you'd like to make a donation or learn more about it. Or maybe, I guess, if people live in the LA area, they could even be in the walk. Is that?
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
So you can
sign up. I think it costs like $20 or $30, you know, to donate or whatever. But yeah, you can sign up. Anybody can walk.
There you go. All right, let's get right back into it, because before you know it, we're going to be out of time. And that's going to suck, because we love talking to Michael Anthony and having him on the show. Here on this Wednesday, we are live in Los Angeles. Again, if you miss any of our any of Trunk Nation, just go and listen to it on demand on the SiriusXM app. They usually go up the next day. We had some great guests earlier this week, right into the end of last week. Alice Cooper on the show, so go check it out if you miss anything. Tomorrow, Corey Taylor is here, so the hits keep coming as we bring you shows from L.A. this week. All right, let's get back to the busy phones, Michael. Great call so far. Everybody wanting to talk to you about all sorts of things in your amazing history. Let's go to Sean, who's listening in Florida. You're up next, Sean. Welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. Hi, Eddie. Hi, Michael.
Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing terrific. Just want to say huge fan, and looking forward to seeing The Circle live this summer in Clearwater, Florida. Can't wait.
All right, great. Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
I was curious if you could speak a little bit about the bit of time right before 5150 came out, because I've just never heard too much talked about. But after, you know, Dave had dismissed himself from the band, what was the mindset of the band going in this whole new direction with Sam? Like, what was it like before the album came out? Like, what were you like thinking? Were you nervous? Were you anxious? Was it like a sense of, oh, this is going to be great? Or what was the mindset? I'm just curious.
Well, before Sam actually joined the band, we were all like, what are we going to do now? No, you know, when Sammy joined the band, we knew from the get-go when he first jammed with us, because, like I said, that spark, sometimes you never get it. You never feel it again, and it's just a jam. But when Sammy jammed with us, you know that something was there, because everybody just got along great, and the chemistry was really happening. And we knew we had a kick-ass record, but yeah, like you said, everybody knew Van Halen with Dave. And, you know, it's like, oh, you got some big shoes to fill. Well, no, we don't want to fill those shoes. We got a new pair of shoes now. And, I mean, we knew that we were going to go out there and kick-ass, because we loved the music on the album and what we were doing and how the show was going to be. But yeah, it was very kind of, and Sam, you'll tell you too, he was very nervous before that first show, because we didn't know what to expect. And, you know, either the whole crowd's going to be holding hate banners up, or you don't know what to expect. And it was great. You know, obviously there were a few in the audience, you know, because there's going to be. But I remember it was great, and we just came out with both barrels blazing and said,
yeah,
hey, this is it.
It was it to me, and there's much made, and I get into this with fans all the time, because to me, it seems like there's a segment of fans, they feel like they have to choose a side. You have to be a Roth guy or a Hagar guy. I never understood that, because I truly love both versions of the band. But I look at them as being very different bands.
Exactly.
And they are. So you just have to, if you look at them in that context, I don't see the need to pick a side. The one thing I have said is that there is no band right now in existence that I'm aware of that's still active if you consider Van Halen to still be active, and we don't know what they're doing. We just don't know. They're said this many times. They're like the most stealth band. You just don't hear anything. But if assuming they are still active and are going to go do things with Dave, Dave does not, and let's be honest, cannot sing Sammy's stuff as as a singer. There's literally, no matter if you like the Hagar Van Halen or not, there's literally like a dozen bona fide hit songs from that version of the band. At least 10 bona fide hit songs that are completely on the shelf. Like, if you think about that, it kind of sucks because unless the band was to do something with yourself and Sammy again, there's no way to hear the band that made those songs ever play them again. And you're not talking
unless
like,
you come and see Sammy and B play.
But I mean,
and that's all you'll get.
Right.
Yeah,
the band that actually made the songs. And it's not like that version of the band had one hit and it was, oh, yeah, there was that one hit. That was a whole nother generation's Van Halen. And there's a ton of songs that are just sitting there on the shelf. And yes, you guys do them with the Circle, but I meant the four of you guys.
The four
that
of
made
us,
them.
Yeah. And you can speculate all you want because the way the music was evolving and growing and the direction it was going anyway, you know, before Sammy, when Dave was gone and before Sammy joined the band, a lot of the material was being written. So who knows what, you know, obviously how it would have continued with Dave or whatever. But like you said, I consider it two different bands.
Yeah.
You know, and I love playing the Dave stuff. I love playing the Sammy stuff. And I think it's all great.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to the phones. Let's talk to, let me see where we're going to go. So many calls. Brian in Nashville. Go ahead, Brian. You're on with Michael Anthony.
Hey, Ed. Hey, Mike. Big fans. Appreciate your work keeping hard rock and heavy metal out there, man. I'm a professional musician here in Nashville and a bass player. And I got Mike, I appreciate your groove, man. You're a solid bass player. You always keep the groove tight. And I've always respected your playing and learned a lot off of it. What is your current rig? I mean, what do you use now? And second part of it is I'm 47, man. And I notice as I tour and I play and do a lot of studio gigs, man, my hands start swelling up a little bit. I start getting a little bit of arthritis and things as time goes on. You have any trouble with that, or do you do anything to combat that? Or?
No. I mean, you know, I pick up my bass almost every day and play, and even if I'm not, you know, practicing any music in particular, I've got scales and, you know, obviously like an athlete or anyone else, you know, you just got to try to keep everything, keep the fingers moving and everything. As far as swelling up, I haven't experienced any of that, but...
Just throw some hot sauce on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we'll stick
your hands
in
a bowl of my hot sauce.
Okay.
And the rig that I'm playing right now, I'm playing, I have a bass rig that PV is making for me. It's called a VBMA, and it's along the same lines, 8, 10-inch speakers, like a SVT Ampeg style, but only a whole lot better. It's got a clean and a dirty channel, which you can combine or whatever. And then I'm using Schecter basses. In fact, I have a couple of new signature models they just made for me, and I'm really digging those. If you get a chance to check any of those out, I highly recommend it.
Let's talk to Cody, who's in Houston. Hi, Cody. You're on with Michael Anthony.
Eddie, Mike, good afternoon. Mike, it's a pleasure to speak with you. To say that I've been a fan for many years, I'm looking at a ticket stub. You were my second concert, July 15th, 1979, in Midland, Texas.
Okay. How much was it to get in, Cody? What's the ticket price?
I'm looking at a ticket. It says advance purchase $8, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Those are the days. Those are the days. And the people who got the tickets in the front row, those are the people that waited in line the longest. Those are the days, right?
It says general admissions. I remember you lined up, like who in Cincinnati, you line up and run in and hope for the best, right?
So Mike, I hope you're not crushed.
On behalf of all self-professed Van Halen geeks, I have two pretty deep questions. On Atomic Punk, during Eddie's solo, there's something that we used to refer to, my buddies and I, as the electronic fart. It just goes kind of right in the middle of Eddie's solo. Wondering if you recall that and what the story is with that. And then also that 15 or so second little thing at the end of, in a simple rhyme at the end of Women and Children First. What was that?
A right, Cody, your phone's real bad and staticky, yeah, so I think we understood it. So I think we got the general idea of what you're trying to say. But
now, are you talking about an electronic fart the bass made in Atomic Punk?
I don't know. He's gone now because his phone was terrible.
That was busting up. I wasn't aware of anything like that. What did he want to know in Simple Rhyme? In the Simple Rhyme, you're saying something at the end?
Yeah, he says, I'm not sure. In the Simple Rhyme, it's one of my all-time favorite songs, actually.
That's one of my favorite for the background vocals and everything because we kind of, you know.
I love Women and Children First. I think there's those great records. For me as a kid, there's records that impacted me so much that I like remember when I got them. Like I remember the circumstances of the day. Like I can't remember my mom's birthday right now, and I can remember exactly like for real when I got Women and Children First. My mom took me to the dentist. I was like 14.
Eddie, I was impressed with you from the time on that metal show when you were able to name every Van Halen record from the first one all the way through. You remember that?
Yeah.
Stump the Trunk?
Yeah.
And you got that. And I was like, oh, my God. That was even quicker than I would have gotten it.
Yeah, but but that's all I know. Like, I'm terrible on everything else. Like, I don't know. I'm still that guy to this day. Like, my aunt will call me and say, remember, it's your mom's birthday tomorrow. Like, I'm that guy. I'm seriously. I'm that bad with dates. But, yeah, if you want me to go
through
the catalog.
Too bad your mom should have been in a band. Then you would have.
If she made some records, right? It'd be all good. Oh man, yeah, but yeah, I'm not sure where Cody was going with all this stuff, but
yeah.
you mentioned earlier that there were some mistakes that you guys left in. If you listen closely,
yeah,
to
especially
some of the
Atomic
records.
Punk, you know, being off the first record. I mean, you know,
but that's what makes them.
We left them in, you know.
Yeah,
there's four humans playing the music, not you know, no machines or anything.
That's awesome, Vince in St. Louis. Go ahead, Vince.
Hey, shout out to Mike from everybody in St. Louis. I just wanted to reiterate a couple callers ago about Mike being a real solid guy. And I got a real quick story. I'm a policeman in St. Louis, and a lot of times we have to work some of the venues where different concerts are going on. And Mike, I don't know if you remember you opening up for Sammy's 60th birthday parties at the Fox Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Mike opened up the shows, and I happened to be alongside stage. So Mike sets over, Sam comes out, Mike comes to the side of the stage in a pair of flip-flops and shorts, sweating like a pig. He's got a big cup with him. I just kind of look at him, and we make eye contact. He says, how you doing? And we exchange hellos, and I kind of said, what do you got in the cup? And at that time, Sammy had this whole cantina set up on stage. So Mike looks at me and just kind of whispers, it's jungle juice. And I said, jungle juice? And he said, yeah, you want some? And I said, well, I might get in trouble if they see me. And he goes, don't worry, I got you covered, brother. So right in the middle of the set, he walks on stage, comes back with this monster paper cup with no markings on it, and there's my 15 minutes of fame of Mike getting me jungle juice while I'm working.
Oh, boy. I didn't get you fired, did I?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
Michael was sweating again. He was worried. You could tell.
Yeah,
I got fired ever since then.
I was worried about where that was going to go. Anyway, we'll see you guys in St. Louis soon. We'll see you guys in St. Louis soon enough. We always have fun there.
Awesome.
Obviously, that's one of the cities that took Sammy under their wing, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
In the early days. And so St. Louis is always a great time for us.
Yeah. Vince, thank you, and stay safe there on the job. Appreciate it. Yeah, I remember Sammy used to tell me all the time, because I was a fan from way back, and I living in New Jersey my whole life as a solo act before Van Halen, Sammy would rarely come to the East Coast, even in anywhere near New York mm-hmm. and New Jersey, because he had a notoriously rough time drawing and getting interest
right.
in fans there. And I would be sitting there in New Jersey and me saying, like, how come Sammy's not playing anywhere near me? And then there'd be an MTV concert from St. Louis, and he's headlining an arena.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's going on here? He can't get a club date, but in St. Louis, he's headlining an arena. And I remember driving out. The closest one year he came to me was he played in Philadelphia at the Spectrum. And I remember driving at the time his manager, who I believe went on to manage Van Halen,
Ed Leffler
who had passed away, but who's since passed away. But Ed knew even then I was doing radio all those years ago, and he knew that I was one of the few kind of beacons for Sammy's career on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So he called me up. He said, the closest we're getting you is Philly, but if you want to come. And I drove out there, and it was great. But, yeah, I mean, it was always kind of weird how Sam – and Sammy will still tell you this day there's certain parts on the East Coast where his draw is still way rougher than it is in other parts of the country. Yeah. I don't know why. You know, that was always the case, but – he seems to just endure just fine.
Yeah, he did. No problem.
He's doing just fine. We have time for a few more phone calls. We'll get in as many as we can here before we need to wrap things up. Let's talk to Dan, who's also in St. Louis. Hi, Dan.
Eddie, Michael, thanks for the being able to do this. Eddie, this is awesome being able to talk to Michael Anthony.
Well, thank Michael. He was nice enough to deal with my pestering to get him to come
and
do the show.
And thank you, because if it wasn't for all you people, I wouldn't even be here sitting talking to Eddie.
What do you got, Dan?
Michael, got to ask you a question, because we all know your contributions to Van Halen, backup vocals being awesome. Just your charisma, I think, in that band with the vocals and the way you handled the bass, just made the band the way they were, because, you know, you had the two crazy brothers and the crazy lead singer, and you seemed like the conduit of the band itself. So I was wondering, being that you got song credits on all the albums, could you please, because you tend to back off on this when other people actually, you know, Eddie said some stuff about your contributions and how he had to show you how to play, sir. Can you please talk about, or just elaborate a little, like, what was your attitude when you went in the studio with those guys on the early albums, and, you know, maybe how you had some input on that stuff? I'm a big fan. I got a tattoo of the old Van Halen logo right on my arm.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, Eddie was the kind of guy. Eddie,
go ahead, Dan. We're short on time, so we'll let Michael answer
Eddie would
your question.
Eddie comes up with like a zillion licks, a zillion ideas for songs, and we would take them and jam them, and everybody throw their two cents in, and that was the early Van Halen. I mean, that was great doing songs like that, because everybody would just kind of put their stuff in. And, of course, you know, I contribute where I did. I wasn't one of the guys that really came with it with the ideas for songs or whatever. But, you know, we took them and worked on them as a band in the studio.
Thank you for the call. Let's talk to John, who's here in California. Hi, John. What's going on? You're on with Michael Anthony.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Good, John. What's happening?
Not much. You guys were talking about when Sammy joined and he was like, you know, in certain parts of the country, like your first show was Shreveport, Louisiana, where he's like, Sammy who? There was a show in San Diego, and there's a Van Halen special, Unleashed, on MTV, where Sammy takes a shirt up on stage and holds it up, and it says, No Dave, Tour 86. Do you guys remember, or does that ring a bell at all?
Yeah, Sammy would have somebody with that shirt at every show and toss it to him on stage so he could hold it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
It was a prop.
You know what? There were so many things like that that got, everything from F you, Sammy, to who's Dave or whatever. You know, it was like back and forth. And sometimes
there were a lot of banners back in those days. I remember.
There were. People don't hold those kind of banners up anymore, you
know?
And
Sammy, I remember, used to always run around on stage with them, whatever they said, and hold them up. But I said that, too, back when I first started going to shows back in the late 70s as a little kid. People used to always drape banners up. Did they do that at old Van Halen shows?
Oh, my God. We'd have more bras hanging off our microphone stands. Oh, my God, you know? And Sammy, he literally puts on every piece of clothing that somebody would throw up on stage, whether it fit him or not. You know, a couple times it's like, no, Sam, no, don't put that on. Don't put that on. It's too small.
I know. I remember that. No, I'm sure there was so much stuff going on that you don't exactly remember exactly what was thrown up there.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and everybody was, like I said, was nervous. Sammy was nervous. So we just got up there and did our thing.
Mark in Nebraska. Go ahead, Mark. You're on with Michael Anthony.
Mark, what's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Michael, big fan of everything you do, but please try to get Chicken Foot back together. Real quick, can you touch on, is there any validity to the fact that Patti Smyth turned down the spot in Van Halen after David left before Sammy took it?
There was a very short time where Eddie was a little bit infatuated by Patti Smyth and her vocals and whatever, and I think he actually went out and jammed with her a few times on stage. But it's like we're all thinking, how can you have a girl singing songs about banging girls?
Well, you know, today...
Maybe some girls, you know, well, yeah, maybe today you can't.
Today,
you know, it was kind of like the way, you know, a lot of Dave's lyrics or whatever, I don't think really lent itself to someone like Patti Smyth singing, you know. I was a big Patti Smyth fan, too. But
Great singer, but I don't know if it would have worked in Van Halen.
We were kind of looking for, you know, what we were going to do next, you know, because we obviously weren't going to get anybody to be like a Dave clone. We didn't want to do that, you know. We didn't want to be those kind of guys. So, you know, it was kind of an infatuation that I know Eddie had with Patti Smyth.
Let me ask you about a guy that recently, another person with the association with Van Halen, yeah, that recently put some stuff online, Mitch Malloy, who I just saw recently. What's your recollection of that experience?
I never really got to jam that at all, really, with Mitch in the studio. Ed had some music, and I know, you know, he went and visited Ed at one point. And so I was kind of like, I don't even think that really got to the point to where the whole band, you know, everybody.
It was
jammed
more of
him
and Eddie sort of
trying some
stuff out. It was more
of like him and Eddie trying it out and seeing what would work. And if, for whatever reason, it didn't.
Right.
But, and I don't really know Mitch. I think I met him. I can't even remember. But from what I read or whatever, he seems like a real nice guy.
Yeah, he's a great singer.
He's a good singer,
And he still, I mean, I've known Mitch a long time. I just saw him recently, and he still looks the same, too.
Is his hair still long, or has he cut it?
No, it's still long. He still looks like he's 25 years old. It's crazy.
I hate those kind of guys.
It's crazy. It's just totally wrong. it really is. James in Mississippi, a few more calls before we have to end. James in Mississippi. Go ahead, James.
Hey, I'm sorry, Mr. Anthony Burris. Stupid question, but I'm not a musician.
I'll give you a stupid answer.
Okay. I'm trying to come up with a question that you don't get asked every day by fans. On the inside cover of the For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge album, there's a bunch of pictures of y'all just hanging out in the studio and stuff. And I always heard that on the first pressings of the record, on the chalkboard in the background was somebody in the band's phone number, and that you guys had to reissue it without that phone number.
Yeah, I forget whose phone number it was because Eddie, you know, when somebody would come by or just so that we knew, you know, contact information readily in the studio, it was in kind of in our control room behind the studio. There was a chalkboard, and if, you know, it was like, oh, Mike, oh, I can reach you at this number, you know, and it would be up there. And yeah, there I don't know whose number it was, but somebody's cell number or home phone number, something like that, was on the chalkboard.
Wow.
And I remember it happening. I can't remember who made the observation, but yeah, we changed it.
So, and all of a sudden they start getting calls and you realize, oh shit, that's on the record.
Yeah, it's like somebody singing a phone number, random phone number, and all of a sudden you get this guy who people are hanging out at their house going, hey, where's the...
Well, listen, man, I'm up against the end of the show here. I can't thank you enough. It's always great to see you.
Eddie, it's my pleasure. Like I said, whenever I'm going to talk to you, I'm like, 15 minutes, I ain't got nothing to talk about, Eddie. And then next thing you know, 2 hours, and we're still going. Anyway, it is a pleasure, man.
Well, there you go. Huge thanks to Michael Anthony. It is no small feat to drive from where he lives in Orange County to the Los Angeles area, especially when my radio show is on live Pacific time, 11 a.m., with traffic out there, which is just mind-blowing. And Michael was nice enough to do it. Be sure to check out his hot sauce. Be sure to donate, if you can, to his charity for the walk that he's doing there. And let's all keep our fingers crossed that maybe somehow, some way, we will get this Van Halen mega show so many people fantasize about. As usual, connect with me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Eddie Trunk. EddieTrunk.com is the official website. Blog appearances all on the homepage. Rocklahoma now next weekend. I'll be spending a lot of time in Tulsa. And also, you can email me through the site. Music news updated daily on the site. And as I mentioned, all my appearances, Rocklahoma is up next. Honored to host that year number 11. I've done it every year. Look forward to seeing all the good people out there in Pryor and the Tulsa area, where I'll also be spending some extra time, because then that following Friday, I'm hosting a show at the IDL Ballroom in Tulsa with Tom Kiefer. So good stuff. See you guys out that way. Of course, another Eddie Trunk podcast is new next Thursday. We post new every Thursday, podcast1.com and iTunes. And my thanks to Katie Irizarry. She is the producer of the Eddie Trunk podcast. Have a great week, everybody. See you next week for another all-new episode.
Here's an interesting fact for you. There are nearly 1 million new books published in the U.S. alone every year. 1 million. So if you like to read, how do you choose what you're going to read? Well, that's where Fully Booked by Kirkus Reviews comes in. You see, Kirkus has been one of the top book review publications for over 80 years. They do a deep dive on thousands of titles every year, including interviewing best-selling authors and telling you what might be the hot new release before everyone else knows. So figure out what your next read is going to be. Download Fully Booked right now on the Podcast One app, at Apple Podcasts, or at podcastone.com.